Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. For the first time since 2008, liberals are now in the majority on the state's high court. We explain what this new era of Wisconsin politics means. Plus, Republicans regain their supermajority in the state Senate. And after a string of statewide defeats, do Republicans have a long-term demographic problem? All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 7th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We have a lot to recap post-election on Tuesday. Let's start with the top ticket item, which is the state Supreme Court race. Jenna Protasiewicz now became the first justice to be elected, and now it's going to be in a liberal majority, the first time in 15 years. A very significant race here. She won by 11 points over her rival, Dan Kelly. We have a lot to discuss about the takeaways about this race, but I kind of just want to go straight to her victory speech and Dan Kelly's very nasty rhetoric in what I would call maybe not even a concession speech. So let's hear from both of those candidates first, JR, and then we'll kind of go into the takeaways.
Now, this didn't turn out the way that we were looking for, and it brings me no joy to say this. I wish that in a circumstance like this, I would be able to concede to a worthy opponent. But I do not have a worthy opponent to which I can concede. I have been committed to the rule of law my entire career. I understand this to be the most fundamental, basic promise of civilization. And at its heart, it lives in the judiciary, and if not there, nowhere at all. We've had this laid out plainly for us. We could have the rule of law or the rule of Janet. And the people of Wisconsin have chosen the rule of Janet.
Too many have tried to overturn the will of the people. Today's results show that Wisconsinites believe in democracy and the democratic process. Today, I'm proud to stand by the promise I've made to every Wisconsinite that I will always deliver justice and bring common sense to our Supreme Court. This is a victory for all of us. Our state is taking a step forward to a better and brighter future where our rights and freedoms will be protected. And while there is still work to be done, tonight we celebrate this historic victory that has obviously reignited hope in so many of us.
So this is now Dan Kelly's second defeat in 3 years. There was also massive turnout. I mean, more than 1.8 million registered voters turned out to the polls, which is higher than any other state Supreme contest not coinciding with a presidential primary since at least 2000. And that was according to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Now, we don't even have the results certified, but that is a lot of people turning out. Of course, the discussion is the issues that were on the ballot. Protasiewicz was very outspoken on two main ones, redistricting and the abortion issue. So it almost was another true test that showed how many voters are energized about this abortion issue, and she laid it out there. I mean, she welcomed the decision to bring that case before the high court, as we know that it's likely once she is sworn into office on August 1st, JR, we are going to see a series of lawsuits being brought forth by Democrats and their allies. But the one we know for sure that is going to likely land there first is the lawsuit that Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call are seeking to repeal the 1849 abortion ban. So let's also just talk about what didn't go well for Dan Kelly.
The big picture of this is this was a failure of the conservative movement, both nationally and Wisconsin, to realize what was on the ballot, what was at stake in this race until it was too late. Whereas the liberal side of the aisle circled this date 3 years ago when Dan Kelly lost and made it a 4-3 conservative majority, saying, this is our chance to win it back. What do we have to do? Then you saw phenomenal coordination on the liberal side, big donors giving money to the state party. The state party moved money to Janet Protasiewicz, $8.3 million at last count. She then got up on the air with these TV ads that she was able, even though she was outspent in the final week or two on TV. She had more points on the air because she had lower rates in buying ads. You add that up with the abortion issue, which is a problem for Republicans. They are in a box, don't know how to get out of it. And then candidate quality. Daniel Kelly was not a great candidate. Yair lost once by 10 points. A person's character, something comes out in tough moments. What you saw in his concession speech, if you want to call it that, was not a shiny moment for Daniel Kelly. I had somebody point out to me that almost every candidate who loses a tough race thinks the same thing. They're not dumb enough to say it, though. Not on the air. Not like that. Not in a public forum. It is not a good look for him going out to do that. And now looking forward, the question is, what do Republicans do about abortion? Now, we saw legislatively, they don't have an answer, right? Because Robin Voss, Mary Felskowski, other lawmakers proposed this bill to add exceptions for rape or incest the first trimester. Within 4 or 5 hours of them having a news conference to announce it, Devin Lemieux, the senator earlier, said it's not going to hit the floor. Their best hope, Republicans tell me, might be for the court to strike down the 1849 ban, but leave in place the 20-week prohibition that Scott Walker signed in 2015. It would take the issue maybe off the table. But laws are talking about whether you can have an abortion in Wisconsin and not when you should be able to have the abortion in Wisconsin. They are losing the issue, and it's not going to change anytime soon unless the court gives them an escape valve that's manageable for them.
Right, and I'm hearing the same thing from Republicans that I've been talking to all week. As long as there is an abortion ban on the books, Republicans are very likely to continue to lose statewide elections. It's just an issue that's not going to go anywhere. I mean, sure, August 1st, maybe there'll be a lawsuit on day one, but the court process takes a while. So, you know, we could be maybe looking to late fall for this issue to be resolved. If not, I mean, it's going to take a while. And there could be more elections in the future. We know there's the 2024 election that everyone is now looking to now that we take pause, that we just finished this one. But all eyes are on 2024. So there's still a lot at stake. And with liberals on control of the court, we got to still just bring up quickly the redistricting issue. You know, I talked to Law Forward this week as well. They are the group that is going to bring a new challenge. They say they are not going to relitigate the one that is that already was settled that gives Republicans still their, you know, very favorable district lines. But that is something also we could see. They're thinking probably, they say, late summer, early fall, and that was also on the ballot. And I think voters also really got excited about that, too, of the possibility of having more, what we hear a lot, more fair maps here in Wisconsin.
Republicans have been shielded from the public perspective on abortion because of those maps, all right? It has been their priority for years to enact restrictions on abortion, and there are members of that caucus, both caucuses, who know this is a political loser for them, but morally believe the 1849 ban is the right place to be, and they don't want to see exceptions added because, again, that's their philosophical view of the world, how it should be. And I'm not trying to knock that, but that explains why you can't get a compromise for Republicans on the issue legislatively, because there is a split. All those maps, by the way, it's okay. So now we have a lawsuit about those. That's going to be fascinating to watch how that plays out. But that's also why you're seeing Republicans talk about exceptions, because they know if a map is quote-unquote fair, more whatever word you want to use, more swing seats means you're more vulnerable on issues that drive voters. Abortion is driving voters right now in Wisconsin.
And also just speaking, going back to the issues, too, I think this was another prime example and maybe a playbook going forward for judicial races. Of course, they're nonpartisan, but really, I mean, being outspoken on these issues helped Protasiewicz from what I'm hearing from both sides. I mean, Kelly not wanting to talk about things, sticking to the Constitution, clearly wasn't a strategy. I mean, even looking back to Tim Michaels, too, he really hit crime, which is what Kelly did, too, with all the groups backing him and putting all those ads, negative ads out there about Protasiewicz's record as Milwaukee County judge and former prosecutor. But even looking at Tim Michaels, he was only talking about crime, too. What about school reform? What about other issues, jobs, just other things that really didn't resonate with voters. Of course, abortion takes a very big umbrella, JR, but it's other things that we're seeing Republicans not hit on that voters are wanting to hear about from these candidates.
I had a Republican argue to me that crime is a potent issue, but think about it. Crime is highest in urban areas, more concentration of people. Who tends to live in urban areas? Democrats.
Yep.
Suburbanites go, well, I can avoid crime by not going into the big bad city. And what motivates me right now? Abortion, redistricting, other issues. It's not effectively moving people in the suburbs where they are losing people left and right. And that's a problem for them.
All right, let's move on to the 8th Senate District now. Dan Knodel, the Republican, came out on top. It was a much narrow race than I think a lot of people expected in a very heavily red district. Money played a big factor that we've been talking about for a while. I mean, but you got to give Jody Habegger-Sidkin some credit that she got that close. I mean, it was a very fascinating race to watch, too. It wasn't even called when I know I went to bed around 2:30-ish in the morning. It was called around 7 a.m. But still, I think, you know, this race was just something to also, I think, almost a warning sign for Republicans that what is considered safe might not be in the future.
So Janet Protasiewicz won that district, you know, won it.
Right.
She took more votes in that district than what Kelly got. That helped the top of the ticket pull Jody Habegger-Sidkin closer. Knodel, he signed on to the bill, the exceptions, the first trimester for rape and incest, wrote a column about it. He says he also, I talked to him, had represented about half of that Senate district between his three versions of the assembly seat. He's represented since 2009. Connecting with people helped, probably. Power of incumbency, those kinds of things. My question is, what will his map seat look like next fall? Just real quickly, you talk about the lawsuit that's coming. The timing, can they get a lawsuit through and a map in place by April of 2024 to have lines in place for the fall? It's doable. Remember, this last round of the court fight, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin really got going in late fall on that lawsuit, had a decision in March. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned it. They had new maps in place by Easter weekend in April. So there is a window, but you can bet every Republican involved in that lawsuit is going to try and delay every step, try and push it past a point where they can have maps in place for the fall. Now, if I go back and really dork out about the last round of redistricting, Republicans keep going, hell, we got plenty of time, got plenty of time. I'll bet you they argue the other thing next spring of it's getting too late. So just watch that window for that lawsuit. How quickly can they get it done?
All right. And still sticking on the state Senate district, too, a lot of it was heavily focused on the impeachment. Now that they have Senate has a supermajority, they do have these impeachment powers. So I do just want to explain the impeachment process to our viewers, too. So let's pull up the slide because, of course, a lot of people are making comments. We heard from Senator Devin Lemahieu saying, no, we don't want to use these powers. But it actually starts in the assembly. So the majority of the assembly has to vote to impeach official. Then the Senate tries to impeach. Then the 2/3 of the Senate has to vote to convict. And then an official would be removed from office. So we did hear from, we had some reporters at an event in Waukesha where we grabbed Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu and Senator Knodel about this issue because it's one that Knodel campaigned on. He said in the final days before Tuesday that he said he would be interested in possibly removing Protasiewicz from office. Did that fuel his campaign a little bit? Who knows? But first, let's just listen from Lemahieu saying, we're not really going to explore this. It has to be a crime. And then Knodel kind of just gives his reasoning that this is a power that they have that his members should consider. Let's take a listen.
Well, if there's some serious crimes involved, which is what sort of the crimes or misdemeanors, which is sort of the standard, which, I mean, we're not going to use impeachment to overturn elections or anything like that.
So impeachment, so specifically, you're drawing that line at someone would have to have committed a crime.
Something very serious.
To me, it's an accountability process. And we have some situations, particularly in the area of crime recently, where people are being, lives put in jeopardy by decisions made by circuit court judges in a district where they can't vote. So this is a part of our Constitution, which I have taken an oath to uphold. Whether it's been used or not, it hasn't. But there, that opportunity is there, and it's something that I've sworn to and bound by to consider.
So with Knodel, we kind of both talked to him this week, as we just heard from him. What he was talking about specifically there that we heard was kind of using those powers to look at Milwaukee County,
D.A. John Chisholm.
It's been a long week. I apologize, everyone. D.A. John Chisholm, because of the whole Daryl Brooks situation, he said that's the power that I would like to use to remove higher officials. Now, we don't know if Republicans will use this. We're already hearing from Devin LeMahieu. We don't want to. It has to be for something very, very serious. We have not heard from one person, though, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, if he wants to explore this. But I've also heard from some Republican operatives that they kind of look like sore losers if they tried to use it. But it is still out there. There are very unexpected things that can happen here in Wisconsin. But what are you hearing about this, JR?
So, one, remember, the Constitution says you can remove somebody for corruption in office or for the commission of a crime or misdemeanor. So it can't be, no, I guess I shouldn't say can't. It sounds like it can't be just because you don't like their positions. But we don't define in state law what a public official is who could be removed through the impeachment process. That would require probably a court battle. We haven't pushed the boundaries of what you can have for, like, what is a crime or a misdemeanor, what is corruption in office. That's pretty vague. There also, by the way, is a separate process spelled out in the Constitution to remove a judge or a justice. That requires two-thirds votes in both houses. So lots of unknowns here, but the bottom line is you are usurping democracy by taking this power and removing somebody from office unless it is for a crime, right? Corruption in office, or with the judges, it spells out if they are not able, physically or mentally, to perform the job. So do you want to cross that road of we're going to start picking people out we don't like because of their policies? That is a dangerous game to play in politics.
Some names I have heard tossed out there by some Republicans is Sarah Godlewski, maybe. They might act on that because, I mean, right, we just saw the resolution that was passed a few weeks ago. They don't really approve of how she got appointed instead of elected to that position. But it really just remains to be seen. There's a lot of top Republicans that we still haven't heard from on this issue. Now, let's get to another key takeaway from the elections and everything that was on the ballot on Tuesday is, do Republicans have a long-term demographic problem? And many people I spoke to, yes, it's a statewide problem. And specifically, there was crazy amount of changes that we saw in the Bow and Wow counties. I mean, Janet Protasiewicz won all of the Bow counties, and Kelly just didn't hit the numbers that he needed in Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee. We're going to highlight Ozaukee and Dane in just a little bit, JR, but these numbers, I mean, this created no pathway for Kelly to win, and this really just shows, once again, yes, we are still a 50-50 state, but how Democrats are making inroads in very Republican, used-to-be Republican strongholds.
Yeah, so caution here. 1.85 million people turned out on Tuesday, which is phenomenal. That's crazy turnout. 3.2 million voted presidential election in 2020. So like I read in the Wall Street Journal this week, an editorial like, Wisconsin may not be a swing state in 2024. I don't know if I'm going that far just yet.
I got to argue against that.
Maybe a referendum more on abortion than it is anything else. But what you're seeing here is the complicated math for Republicans. If they keep losing support in the Wow counties, the Bow counties, and Democrats keep turning out, the numbers they have in Dane County, Milwaukee County, Ron Johnson showed the math. All you got to do is get to 63-ish% in Waukesha County, which Johnson did, not lose Dane County with like in the teens, which is what Kelly did, and then hit your numbers in Brown, Ottagamie, Winnebago. The math is there. It's not like Republicans don't have a path. However, as long as they keep struggling with these demographics in the suburbs, they are going to be in trouble because there are not enough people outstate anymore to offset what's going on. If you look at just Dane and Milwaukee County alone, Protasiewicz had a 260,000 vote margin from those two counties. She won statewide by 203,000 and change, right? That tells you the advantage you come out of right away from two counties, the two most populous in the state. How do you fix that? You got to find Republicans in Dane County, because they live here. You got to find them and turn them out, motivate them. You have to find Republicans in Milwaukee County, because again, they live there. And you have to gain back the people you started losing under Donald Trump in 2016, those suburban college-educated women who are going, this is not the party I can really go for anymore.
And it was a week ago, JR, you said too, if Janet Protasiewicz hits over 80%, which is possible in Dane County, she could have a clear pathway. Also, too, she still had to have what she did in the Wow counties and the Bow counties. She performed pretty well. So let's pull up that slide, too. 82% in Dane, 18% for Kelly and Dane. But Ozaukee now is what I would call the purplest of purplest counties in Wisconsin now because it has dramatically changed over the last few statewide elections.
Now, is that, again, an abortion referendum or
Correct.
A long-term thing? We saw it is getting bluer. It wasn't great for Republicans in November, but is that a long-term thing or is that just this moment and can it be brought back? Remember, 2008, Barack Obama won Wisconsin by 14 percentage points and it was all like, it's over. Like Republicans are going to be in the wilderness for years. 2 years later, the pendulum swung back hard, and they've been in charge now, really, had been in charge for 8 solid years till Evers won in 18. The pendulum hasn't swung yet. The question is, have we hit the low point for Republicans, or is it going to get worse before it gets better?
Right. And what's interesting, too, is we want to move on to the ballot referendums, too. Those were overwhelmingly Republican-led efforts, and a majority of Wisconsinites approved them. Now, was it maybe some confusion that people didn't understand the questions? But that's what also some Republicans pointed to, that, look, issues can drive out voters. So let's just recap what those were. There was the bail amendment that passed overwhelmingly. There was also a welfare one, referendum, that was non-binding, which was also just kind of just gauging interest on the idea that we are likely to see legislation come out from Republicans about whether able-bodied, childless adults should be required to look for work in order to receive taxpayer-funded benefits. It's important to note that this is largely, it is, a symbolic move, and the unemployed and food share recipients already right now have to meet certain work search requirements. Also, the bail thing. We've talked about this multiple times in the show. I'm sorry for kind of going quickly on this because we're running out of time on the show because we have a lot to get to. But this was the constitutional amendment that would make it harder for defendants, violent offenders, to get out of jail on bail before trial. Sorry. So that's kind of one thing that I was taking away too, that these were all Republican-led efforts, like I kind of just led into this topic. So it's maybe, you know, issues like these, you know, maybe prime example of what Republicans should focus on, too, maybe in the next election, or just talking more issue-driven stuff.
The challenge is, remember, go back to Marquette polls in October of 2022. Inflation, crime, and abortion were the top issues. Mm-hmm. And Republicans kept saying, see, we have the issues on our side, inflation and crime are going to drive voters. They didn't, because it's not what's important, it's what motivates people. Abortion is more of a motivator for key demographics than inflation or crime were last fall, and it's still happening right now.
All right, non-election news. We're just going to recap this week. Joint Finance held their first listening sessions. These are these public hearings that invite people to say, what are your top concerns heading into the budget season? So this one was in Waukesha, and a lot of people talked about their priorities. During 8 hours of testimony, speakers brought up issues about education, affordable child care, and many others. Now, Wednesday's public listening session was among the first steps in the budget writing process, and it's one of four forums that are scheduled to take place around the state this month. We heard a lot of officials specifically talk about shared revenue. We heard from Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow and Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson hit on these issues during their testimony, saying taxes are going up. We need more shared revenue. Here's kind of our pitch to them right now as lawmakers were listening to them. So let's just play a clip real quick from both of them.
In Waukesha County, 42% of the mandates from the state are paid by our property taxes. We are funding these priorities, which may not necessarily be the county's priorities or our local constituents' priorities. On top of requiring us to fund certain operations, the state has limited the tax levy that we're able to collect. Under the tax levy limit in the last 5 years, Waukesha County has averaged 1.7% tax increase. During that same time, the state fund general fund collections have increased over 5.7%. We're hoping that as we work together, we can move forward to look at opportunities where we can share with you on that. As I've said before, third largest county, you would think we would get a good portion of the shared revenue. Waukesha County received $636,000. It's 0.25% of our $300 million budget.
By supporting an increase in shared revenue within the state budget, you can enable all communities around the entire state of Wisconsin to invest in their core services. As you all know, Milwaukee's an economic engine for the state of Wisconsin. As we build on the economic strength of Milwaukee, the entire state of Wisconsin is able to benefit. But none of that happens, though, without basic city services and a good quality of life. So we need to maintain a productive and efficient municipal government, and that is adequately funded. So I'm optimistic about Milwaukee. I'm optimistic about the entire state of Wisconsin, and the Joint Finance Committee has a role in turning that optimism into reality.
All right, we got about 5 minutes left, so we're going to head straight into stock picks this week. And we got to mention the mayoral race in Green Bay. We have Rising, which is Eric Endrith.
Yeah, so look, we talked price tag more than $1 million for this mayoral race. And the money wasn't invested because they wanted Eric to be in charge of potholes for the next 4 years. It's about 2024, early voting. Who's going to have final say on the number of spots, the number of days, and those kinds of things. Now, Genrich won over former GOP state rep Chad Weininger by about 6 percentage points, less of a margin than what Evers won by Green Bay over Michaels in 2022. May have been because of the issues with the 2020 election that Republicans were jazzed up about, the surveillance system put in City Hall. Those are all problems. But the big thing is Democrats invested money in him in his race to help in 2024. Likewise, Corey Mason, Racine mayor, he wins re-election easily. Another one of the mayors with the Zucker bucks that Republicans got upset about, he wins re-election. He'll have final say over early voting and what's going on in Racine in 2024. Another big deal. Got to mention Tom Nelson, who ran for U.S. Senate last year, won easily his re-election bid in, out of Gaming County Exec. So a lot of former Dem lawmakers who did okay on Tuesday in winning the races.
All right, and mixed this week are two congressmen, Brian Steil and Derek Van Orden, because they are now on a watch list that their seats could look a little bit more competitive.
Yeah, so the DCCC is put on the watch list, but my question again is, what's the map going to look like in 2024? Now, first off, Protasiewicz won both of these districts in 11-point blowout. We don't usually have 11-point blowouts in presidential races in Wisconsin. I've covered six. Unless your name is Barack Obama, I can guarantee you, or I said, unless Barack Obama's on the ballot, they've been less than 22,000 votes every time, all right? So probably going to be a big blowout next fall, though never say never. But what's the district going to look like? Are you going to see a map change through the courts? We know about the legislative one. A little bit different argument because the Supreme Court of Wisconsin actually embraced the Evers map. However, it was an Evers map drawn on a directive that had to be a least change approach to what Republicans drew in 2011. So now you probably have two lawsuits, right? One about the legislative districts, one about the congressional districts. If you're a Democrat and you're successful, where do you go to draw the map? Okay, the first is obvious one, right? It got a little swingier this last map, although, you know, Style won handily in 2022. But you maybe shave off some of like Waukesha County, Western Racine County, Walworth County, go up and grab some territory kind of going toward Madison. That maybe gets you a little more to 50-50. Okay, Van Orden. You go longtime Democratic seat. You go grab some more of the stuff around Dade County. I mean, the second district, which touches both of those, is 75% Democratic. Mark Pocan can shed some territory and be right. Okay. All right. But my question is that the smart play from talking to people? Because the third, Western Wisconsin, is trending away from Democrats, right? More rural. Is it better to go over to Scott Fitzgerald's seat in the fifth? Make it more suburban, focused on what's trending towards you, and make the long play. I'm not encouraging anybody. Not
sounds like you just drew the maps for them, JR.
I've just been talking to Democrats, and they're like, yeah, this is what people are talking about, the first and the third, but maybe the fifth is a smarter play. Now, I've never tried to draw the maps to see what you could do with those, but just keep that in mind that you're going to see a map. Really watch where they focus. That might tell you where the Democrats think long term. This is our best play with this map.
And a good point, too. Are they going to file a new suit against just the state legislative maps, maybe a separate one for congressional maps, do it at the same time? Law Forward told me yesterday they are nowhere near that decision yet, but that is also at play here. We know the legislative maps are going to be changed. It's the big question about the congressional maps and how they do that, because, like you said, they were Evers maps that were enacted, but he couldn't really change much.
And don't forget, the state Supreme Court, if Democrats get too aggressive, the U.S. Supreme Court's out there and Republicans go there and say, hey, they cross lines, because remember the Evers map the court picked originally March of last year, the Republicans with the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, you crossed some lines there. So there's a warning flag for Democrats. Don't get too aggressive. And oh, by the way, everybody home, you can't draw a 50-50 assembly map without gerrymandering it for Democrats.
Right. Very good
the
point.
The Senate one, you can do it. It takes a little creativity. You can get there. But the assembly, because of geographic, it is really, really tough unless you gerrymander it. Get to a 50-50 assembly map.
All right, and falling this week is Scott Walker's legacy.
Yeah, well, first, okay. He got behind Rebecca Clayfish. She couldn't get through the primary for Republican nomination for governor in the fall. Got behind Daniel Kelly, his appointee to the Supreme Court, 2016. Got to the primary, lost the general. One of his appointments, the First District Court of Appeals, lost 2-1. And now his legacy, Act 10, right to work, all these things. We don't know what the court's going to do, what lawsuits are going to come. But there's a bigger thing to pull away from here. The machine that Walker, Paul Ryan, Reince Priebus, Robin Voss, and Scott Fitzgerald built over 8 years in Wisconsin is being dismantled. It's in the process of it. The question is it totally torn apart? And the party is a problem. It has a problem. remember, Republicans redrew or rewrote campaign finance laws in 2015 to allow those unlimited donations to parties and unlimited transfers to candidates. They thought they had a gold mine because Scott Walker was a phenomenal fundraiser. Mm-hmm. They were never going to lose that power because they were going to have that forever. They didn't anticipate losing in 2018. They didn't anticipate Ben Wickler. Wickler and Evers are a fundraising powerhouse on their own. The Republicans are at a disadvantage now. And it's not a loophole. They did it on purpose. They thought this was going to be their thing going forward. The Republican Party of Wisconsin is not in position to raise money the way the Democrat Party is because they don't have the East Wing. It's just tougher. Brian Schimming is the new chair, still trying his feet under him. Really odd decision by Daniel Kelly to say, I won't take money from the state GOP,
yeah,
but I'll take in-kind donations. So an in-kind donation is, I tell you, I'm going to do mail on your behalf. You have to give me permission to do it. You report it. I'm spending money for you. That's okay, according to Daniel Kelly, but not the money. If the money had been transferred, he could have done more TV ads. So if you're a big donor, you go, well, the state party has kind of been a little bit of a mess lately. Why do I want to give them money if it's not going to go right to Daniel Kelly to help the big cause? So there are all kinds of issues out there about what's going on. They've got to figure out the abortion issue. They got to figure out infrastructure. They got to figure out candidate quality.
And fundraising.
And if they don't, you know, it's going to be tough. But again, the pendulum always swings in politics. The question is, when's it going to swing back?
Absolutely. All right. Great way to end our show. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.